Val, you are by far the most interesting single-serving friend I've ever met. To have this thing, everything on a plane is single-serving, even the...
Well, I get it. It's very clever.
Oh, thank you.
How's that working out for you?
What?
Being clever.
Great.
Keep it up, then.
Hello there, and welcome to Out of Theaters, the podcast that reviews the movies of yesteryear, this year. My name is Billy Culpa, and I'm here with my good friend and film critic, Will Pfeiffer. Will, hello.
Billy, how you doing?
I like how you always yell my name, and I try to get out my introduction as fast as I can, because sometimes you get antsy and want to yell at me.
I want to talk.
Will!
Billy!
Yeah! This week's episode...
Because you destroyed me in trivia.
I feel guilty even mentioning it, but I destroyed him 1-0.
No, I watched Alien. I got nothing right. It was the movie was Alien, a movie I love.
2 points of emphasis I want to bring up this week. First off, one, we are recording this 1 week early.
It's October 29th as we record this.
Almost immediately after our 7 broadcast, mm-hmm. So our episode session. So it needs to be worth saying that we probably just missed a gigantic week of news.
Trump probably did something appalling and stupid that everyone's talking about.
The Indians might have lost the World Series,
or
I think.
Or might have won the World Series.
I know.
Series.
I think we're in the middle of Game 4 right now, and I think they're going to win Game 4.
Right now. Now, as an Indians fan, as a Cleveland sports fan, I always expect them to lose. But as we record this on October 29th,
<That's the spirit.
laughs> it is top of the sixth. Hey, I thought the Cavs were going to lose until like 0.2 seconds before the buzzer went in that final game. Because I've seen him pull defeat out of victory.
That LeBron block.
Oh, my God.
Where he took three steps to get across the court.
I still watch that. I'll call up that video and just watch that
stunning.
LeBron block.
Andrea Iguodala had a quote about it before game one, and he was like, it is awesome. Like, he's the one who got blocked. He's like, what am I supposed to say? The guy took three steps from half court.
And, you know, Cleveland sports have had the fumble and the shot and the drive, all these things where they were crushed. Now, finally, we had the block. This is
positive.
Going back in ancient history. This is last spring, but, you know.
So right now, you're winning.
Right now, we're winning. It's top of the sixth. There's a man on first and second, two outs, and it's 4-1. Cleveland over the Cubs.
All right. So
okay, but
by the time this is old news already. You guys are already.
We've either won
something
or lost.
Might have miraculously happened. Who knows?
Right. Trump. Who knows? What we really want to say is, if we were going to do like election talk and tell you all to get out and vote, which you should definitely do,
absolutely do that.
And by the way, let's just put cards on the table. Don't vote for Trump.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's fair to talk about. So this week's episode is Fight Club, but we want to do, instead of our little bit that we usually do where we talk about movies we've seen lately, mm-hmm. we want to talk about the election and election-related movies.
Right. Yes. We'll do a little political movies because we had grand plans, of course, to do all these political movies, but as usual, we screwed
it
up.
Yeah, we got stuck with stupid Spooky October.
Spooky October!
And that was late because
and
I got
by the
stuck
way,
on a work project.
If Trump wins, it'll be spooky forever.
Spooky eternity, because he'll suspend the four-year thing. That's done.
Oh my God.
Then he'll probably live forever anyway, so...
We'll be looking at that mineshaft gap from Dr. Strangelove.
I think it's important to vote. I think a lot of... You know, I'm not Republican. I'm sure you're not Republican, Will.
No, I am not.
I at least respect the process of having Democrats and Republicans. I don't mind that other people have other ideas. That's totally fine. There are certain things that are unacceptable, like shutting down early voting opportunities
mm-hmm.
in primarily heavy Democratic areas. I want to say, I might have this wrong, but I thought I read up in Madison, somebody got busted closing down things outside of the college because they didn't want the kids to go vote Democrat.
Right.
Things like that, that's shady.
It is shady. And also, pretending that voter fraud is a huge problem when it is not, as an excuse to put onerous requirements on voting in an effort to shut down lower-income voters who tend to vote Democrat.
You can't let suppression be the basis of your campaign. If your whole goal is to make it so other people can't vote— That's a problem. Maybe
right.
you have the wrong message.
Exactly. Or the wrong candidate.
Or, I mean, just maybe that shouldn't be what you're concentrating on. Maybe you want to get as many people to vote as you can, because if you're right,
yes.
they'll come to you.
Right.
I just, so Listen, go vote. Vote down ballot. Don't.
Yeah, vote down ballot.
Don't be that guy who's like, well, Hillary and email. You don't know what you're talking about. One. Two, there's nothing there.
Right.
Three, don't be that person who's like, well, I'll vote for other people, but I'm not going to vote. I'm going to vote for Jill Stein, who, by the way, listen, has investments in oil opportunities and who's a big fraud.
And a terrible musician.
And a terrible musician who is a freaking anti-vaxxer.
Right. And let me just say this. Let me take this moment to be the aging Gen Xer bitching about the millennials. But this is it. We all loved voting for Barack Obama.
That was fun.
He was a great president. He was exciting to vote for a lot of reasons, not the least of which was he was our first African-American president. But also, he was young. It was exciting. I realize Hillary Clinton, who has been around for a long time, for most of our younger voters' lifetimes.
She's more than double my age.
Yes. She may not seem that exciting, despite the fact that she would be our first female president. Let me just say this. You don't always get to vote for an exciting candidate. I voted. Let me run down who I voted
Dukakis.
For. I voted for Dukakis in 88. I voted for Clinton and Clinton. That would both be Bill. Then I voted for Gore and Kerry. Clinton, first time around, was pretty exciting to vote for. Second time around, not so much.
In retrospect, I don't know why he would have been. He is. I remember
he was.
That.
It was. There was a certain, because, and believe me, it kills me to say this of all people, he was the baby boomer president, so he seemed like he was kind of a new era.
Sure.
It was very young and exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
So I haven't been able to, I was most excited to vote for Obama.
Sure.
You have to vote for somebody. Just because they don't excite you on every possible level, don't stay home. Go out and vote.
And you know, we can probably stop there. I don't want to tell you all the reasons why Hillary is a really good candidate and you should totally vote for her.
Right.
But just know that she's probably not the devil that Donald Trump has made her out to be.
No. And she's definitely not the devil that Donald Trump is.
Is, right.
Right. This is a clear choice, people. Okay, this is as political as we'll ever get, and maybe we lose some listeners with this.
Yeah, I think we probably have. But you know, I don't care. Tomorrow's election day, and then maybe in the next 4 years we'll pick them up again. So who knows?
Right.
What I don't want to see happen is have Hillary win and then have the Senate and House not change, and right. then have exactly the same kind of gridlock and nonsense. Let her get in, freaking give her the House or give her the Senate, whatever. Let's get some laws passed. And if you don't like it, vote for somebody else next time.
Right, right, right.
In the primary system, like figure out what it is, but don't. Okay.
Okay, but anyway, this is a movie podcast.
Election
this,
movie.
This is not, what's the podcast we listen to? Keeping it 1600.
Keeping it 1600.
By the way, what are those guys going to do after 2 weeks?
I tweeted them, and they didn't respond, but I'm beginning to grow on the Monday side. Like, I'm kind of liking them a little bit.
I think Lovett's annoying, but I do like the podcast.
I like Veter a lot.
But anyway.
I wanted to ask you what your favorite election movie is. Tomorrow is voting day. What kind of, I have a couple that I can stick with, including a Bill Clinton inspired Primary Colors.
That's a good movie.
But what are your go-to government election voting kind of movies?
I tell you, I really like the movie Election, which 1999.
Matthew Broderick.
Well, Matthew
and Alicia
Broderick.
Silverstone.
No. Reese Witherspoon.
Reese Witherspoon.
Witherspoon.
Whatever. I mixed
and,
up my 90s.
You know,
darlings.
Reese Witherspoon, you know, I don't care about those Legally Blonde movies. She's legitimately great in this movie. This is, I think, we've talked before about how 1999 was a great year for movies, and I think this is one of the best movies of that year. It's all about dirty politics and election and image versus ability and all that kind of thing, but it takes place at a high school election. So it doesn't get involved with, you know, the intricacies of national politics. It just breaks it down, sort of the personalities and scandal and corruption. And it's funny and it's dirty and it's great. And Matthew Broderick is great at playing almost like if Ferris Bueller's life had gone completely wrong, this is what he would be, like kind of a dopey teacher in this dopey school in Nebraska somewhere.
We watched this in high school in my government class. I think it was American.
Really?
Yeah, we watched this in the school.
Was it uncut?
I don't recall now.
Because
I was
there
a senior.
Are some scenes where it's like, I remember being sitting in theater and then some characters say something. I was like, wow.
You know who directed it?
Yes, Alexander Payne.
Alexander Payne mm-hmm. of Nebraska fame.
I said that. I said both Alexander Payne and the word Nebraska earlier.
Did you really?
All his movies are just take place in Nebraska.
Sorry, audience.
No, it's a great movie, though.
I think my favorite election movie is Ides of March.
That's a good movie.
It's... It's very understated. We've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. It's like
one we were going to do, I believe, at one point.
Yeah, it's brief and fast. It's only like 90 minutes
long. Yeah, it's not a big epic. It's very much on the personalities.
It's like a 2-week period in a campaign.
Mm-hmm. Before, George Clooney is, I believe he's a, is he the governor of Ohio?
He's the Bill Clinton kind of guy.
Right. He's the liberal. He's a Democrat. And
I forget who the other guy is.
Well, it's mostly about Clooney and his team. Yeah. In the original play that it's based on.
Is it like a Tennessee Williams play or something?
No, it's a more modern play. Okay. But I believe Clooney's character's never even seen.
Right.
And it's all about, it's actually not about the general election. It's about the primary, isn't it? That's why it's taking place in March. But it's got Ryan Gosling. It's got Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's got Paul Giamatti. It has Evan Rachel Wood, who is currently on Westworld. It's got Marissa Tomei. It's got Jeffrey Wright. It's a loaded cast.
It's a huge,
good, smart, but intimate little movie. It's
Jeffrey Wright, Felix Leiter.
Felix Leiter, yes. Yeah. Sorry. Who is also, actually, Jeffrey Wright and Evan Rachel Wood are both on Westworld.
Oh, interesting.
Currently, yeah.
He's also the good dinosaur, but hey. We've done this. We've had this conversation.
Have we had the good dinosaur conversation?
I like Paul Giamatti, and I really like him paired opposite of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, they're great because they're both smart actors playing smart guys.
Smart weirdos. Like,
yeah.
Guys, and especially the kind of guys who thrive in newspapers, who mm-hmm. like don't really, the hygiene isn't really top of mind. I mean, they seem hygienic enough, but they're dedicated to their craft and they don't.
Well, these are guys like David Axelrod or somebody.
Totally.
You know, they're really savvy political operatives. And I love seeing movies about people who are just smart. And, you know, there's an old saying that what people like watching more than anything on TV or movies, it's not sex, it's not violence, it's they like watching someone who is good at their job do that job.
Yeah, I talk about that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Like doctor shows, cop shows, you know, whatever. But and this is about political people who are good at their jobs. People like to see people do things well. It's interesting to watch. And Gosling is really good in this too. I mean, he's the lead and he's good.
I just had a realization, by the way.
Yes.
You pointed out a life marker milestone
uh-huh.
that I didn't realize was there. I'm never in a position to say, you know, there's an old saying. I've never said that. I've never used that word like or that phrase in context and meant it. You'd use it all the time and you get away with that because you're the teacher.
I've been doing this since I was like 17.
Damn.
I'm just that kind of I've been an old fart forever.
My kid's going to turn like 10 one day. I'm going to say that to him. I'm going to say, you know, there's an old saying and I'm going to fist pump and he's not going to know why I'm doing it. But I just want to point out that.
To clarify, I've never fist bumped when I've said it.
I'm younger. Yeah. Fist pumping's a thing I do.
Oh my God. Your generation. Please.
Really like Ides of March. It's really, really good and it's clever. And it's the kind of thing where I think I said this before, but the first time I watched it, I thought it's fine. It's neat. It's a nice little. I honestly would put it in the same category as that that horrible movie about angels as government agents.
The one with Roger Sterling?
Yeah, with Sterling.
What is it? And Emily Blunt?
And I Matt think Clooney might be
the
in
Assignment
that too.
Bureau. No, he's not in it, but Emily Blunt and Matt Damon are in it, yeah.
Yeah, and I watched it in theater, and I was like, it's fine. It's a competent...
I see what you're saying. It's a weird matchup.
I want to say I watched them in the same era.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and watched Ides of March and was like, oh my God, it's really good. Like, it's way better. There's very few movies that from first to second viewing I had that much of a greater opinion of.
You know, that's a good point, not just about this movie, about it, movies in general, is a lot of times it's the movies that, you know, aren't the Oscar winners, aren't the ones that get all the hype. You see them and you're kind of like, well, that was a nice little movie. And it's afterwards, those are the ones that really stick with you. Even like when I saw Election, I said, oh, that was a funny comedy. It was pretty good. But as you go on, you go like, that was a really good movie.
It sort of attains meaning after.
Yeah.
You know, there's a relationship between Ryan Gosling and Evan Rachel Wood that appears to sort of be, if not the A plot, the B plot of this movie. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. Like the fact that whatever happens between them is just one thing that it could have been anything that really represented the culture of this.
And politics. There is kind of one twist involving Evan Rachel Wood. I won't get into because this isn't a big movie, so I don't want to spoil it.
Sure.
That I think the movie could have done without. Just the mere political machinations are fun to watch.
Well, that's what I'm saying is what happens to her.
You don't even need it, really.
But I thought the first time I watched it, that was the most important thing.
Mm-mm.
And in retrospect, she could have just at one point in the campaign, she could have said, you know, I quit and left. And it wouldn't have all the politics around it still would have been cool. And so,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
The other one that sticks with me, election movies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I have a couple, but Frost Nixon and Primary Colors.
Mm-hmm. Those are both good.
You mentioned JFK last week.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, that's, it's titled JFK. It's all about the assassination. It's not an election movie.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
It's strictly about the assassination.
I saw 13 Days in theater with Kevin Costner.
That's an interesting movie. That's about, yeah, about the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, Bay of Pigs and all. Yeah. I never saw Milk. There's plenty of other big election movies, but Manchurian Candidate, we did on this episode.
That is. I love that movie. And, you know, there's one. Warren Beatty is an interesting filmmaker. He did Bonnie and Clyde. He has a movie coming out. He hasn't done a movie in years and years. He's got a movie coming out about Howard Hughes that looks interesting.
Wait, Warren Beatty, the actor?
Yes, but also the director. Warren Beatty directs most of the movies he's in.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's like Warren Beatty's a very creative guy, producer, director. And he did a movie back in 1998 called Bullworth.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I don't know if I'd call it, I definitely wouldn't call it a great movie. Sometimes it's not even a good movie, but it's the kind of movie I'm glad was made because it's very interesting. And it's obviously, it's not like every other movie out there. He plays a senator who is running for re-election, and he's like an old liberal senator. And he sort of, it's implied he almost kind of goes insane. And he starts like speaking in rap and like talking to the people in this really weird way. And I mean, yes, that sounds awful. And some of the scenes are like, what was he thinking? But there's something about it where he really is trying to say something.
The poster is a rapper
right.
exploding out of Bullworth's mouth.
That's him in like his rap. And Warren Beatty was in his 60s when he did this movie. It's a fascinating, strange
little
movie.
How old is Warren Beatty? Is he like 90?
He must be around 80.
Really?
Yeah, he's up there.
He is 79 years old.
79, yeah. He's Shirley MacLaine's little brother.
He was born on the same day as my kid, Jude. March 30th.
Your kid is 79 years old? Yeah, 89 years old? 79 years old?
Nope. My kid is 7 months old tomorrow.
No. Well, happy birthday, Jude.
Yeah,
happy
thanks,
seventh
Jude.
Birthday. Oh, and let me, one other, I've actually, like an idiot, Googled great political movies. There's there's this movie called, and again, this is one of those movies that when I saw it, I'm like, oh, that movie's pretty good. And the more I think about it, the more I like it. It's called Wag the Dog. Have you ever seen this movie?
I've heard of Wag the Dog.
It's it stars Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman. And what it essentially is about, it's based on a novel, but the president gets caught in a sex scandal. Think Monica Lewinsky. And what they do is they create a fake incident overseas, a little mini war to distract people. And what they do is they never there is no war. It's all a media thing. And it's all like how they, you know, they get footage of a refugee woman carrying a baby, and they have like a song that's written, and they try and it's all faked, and it's very interesting on how they stage a whole political event. And it's very smart, and it's a movie that has the balls to go with its own, like it ends in a dark way. It's very funny, but then it definitely doesn't wimp out at the end. It sort of goes all the way with it.
So it's a staged event.
It's a staged event. The war never even happens. They just stage news footage, and they dig out this song like Old Shoe or something that becomes like the song people are talking about. And it's actually a new song, but they fake it like they found it in the National Archives. And so they start playing it on the radio.
Wow.
It's great. It's all about manipulating the media.
What year did this come out?
97.
90. What is it called?
It's called Wag the Dog.
That sounds fast. I'm actually Googling.
Would like this movie. It's got De Niro. It's got Dustin Hoffman. It's got Woody Harrelson, Dennis Leary, Anne Heche.
I literally just emailed myself Wag the Dog.
It's a good movie. It's a smart, funny, but you know, it has a serious point to make.
If you'd like to email us at Out of
Theaters. That's right. Why not? We never ask people to contact us.
I don't know why. We don't. I love it when people contact us.
I love it. We all, if you send us a halfway decent, anywhere near topic email or text or
if
or
you
tweet,
blast us on our anti-Trump views, I will happily read it.
We will read it. Please.
I will tell you how stupid you are.
And if you if you can go to iTunes and review us, we will be forever in your debt.
You know, we should be careful with that. This is not the episode to tell people to review us because they're going to say,
that's true.
These stupids and
these stupid libtards.
Yep, blah, they're blah, stupid. Blah, blah. Yeah, exactly.
No,
right.
We know you people are smarter than that. But yeah, those are good political movies, good election movies.
Yeah,
we've always talked about doing The Candidate, the Robert Redford one, which is a good one.
I think it's still sitting in our G drive. To mm-hmm. like, we should, you know, if I have the movie, I'll send it to Will if Will has it. You know, we're reviewing it for a podcast. I feel like we're not skirting the copyright system. It's fair criticism.
Sure.
I want to say The Candidate has been sitting in our drive for a year and a half.
It's a good movie. It's a very 70s movie. I mean, it's from 1972.
It's in 4x3, I think.
I can't remember what the aspect ratio is.
I'm pretty sure I remember looking at it being like, that's weird.
But it's Robert Redford and friend of the show, Peter Boyle.
Friend of the show, Peter Boyle.
Because he was on our Young Frankenstein episode. And that movie is almost quaint now, because when it came out, it was seen as a sort of shocking look at how politics are conducted. Now it looks like, you know, after this election, you know, Manchurian candidate will be quaint.
Okay. Well, this week's movie is Fight Club. And we get Fight to pick Club. That because I killed you. I beat you in a fight.
You beat me like Tyler Durden beating up Jared Leto.
Beating up Angel Face.
That's right, Angel Face. So, by the way, wouldn't we all like to beat up Jared Leto after all his stunts on the Suicide Squad?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about Fight Club, and know that whatever I offer, I feel intimidated by this movie, and we'll get into that. But
okay. Well, first of all, we're breaking the first two rules, because you can't talk about Fight Club, and you can't talk about Fight Club.
And the first one means don't talk about the club itself, and the second one means don't talk about the movie.
You know, when I was at the newspaper, I saw this with my good friend Doug Gass, and we never shut up about it. And finally, one of the clerks, and I can't believe no one made this joke, one of the clerks just said to us, I thought the first rule of Fight Club was you don't talk about Fight Club. And
just irritated
with you. We had to give her credit for a perfectly played line.
Who was the clerk, do you know?
It was Don Mitchell, I believe.
I don't know.
This predates you.
Yeah, sure.
So, but anyway.
Most things predate me.
And we're going to do big spoilers on Fight Club. So if you haven't seen it, for God's sakes, don't listen. Because this is one of the movies, this is like Sixth Sense level twist in it.
Yeah.
So we're assuming you've watched it. If you haven't, watch it, come back and watch the movie. It all starts off with our unnamed narrator, played by Ed Norton.
Jack.
He's not named.
I know that. But in the script, they call him Jack. It's fair. We can't keep calling him the unnamed narrator.
No, I think it's important that he is not named. He has no identity in the movie.
His name's Jack.
His name is not Jack.
God, that hurt my ears.
He's called Jack because he reads these magazines, Reader's Digest, that I am Jack's blah, blah, blah.
The fucking script calls him Jack.
He's not Jack.
It says Jack colon and then dialogue.
His name is not Jack.
That's what the script says.
He's not called it in the movie. It only counts if he's called it in the movie. That's how it works.
This feels idiotic. I'm not going to call him the unnamed narrator. Jack is only four letters.
Listen, he's the unnamed narrator. Our unnamed narrator, to get back to my point, is he's an office drone. He works for a company that decides whether or not to recall automobiles. And he and Billy is looking just pissed and frustrated with me right now. And he's going through life. He orders from the IKEA catalog. He's the kind of guy who has more mustard in his refrigerator than actual food.
Have you ever ordered from the IKEA catalog?
I've never ordered from the catalog, but I've
bought, I love IKEA.
I've bought IKEA furniture.
I'm pro IKEA. You know that they consume 1% of the world's
lumber. I've heard that. That's just
isn't that baffling?
Swedes,
crazy. If you buy something from the catalog, you pay double because of the shipping.
Oh yeah, why I've never ordered.
This is my message to the audience. The $180 table is $400 in shipping.
We're fairly near an IKEA, Billy and I here. I mean, relatively speaking.
I'm not kidding. It's exactly 1 hour from my house. We've done it a bunch of times. It's 60 minutes on the dot.
There you go. So now we've done this IKEA. We're doing an IKEA commercial for a movie that essentially hates IKEA and all it stands for. But he, you know, he works at this office. He goes to Starbucks and he can't sleep. He just cannot sleep for some reason. So what he starts to do is he starts to go to these self-help groups or like support groups.
He goes to a doctor and the doctor says, get some sleep. I'm not giving you drugs.
Chew some valerian root and get some sleep. And all our unnamed narrator, I almost said Jack, all our unnamed narrator wants is
he just wants drugs.
Just give me some drugs so I can sleep.
One, if our unnamed narrator, Jack.
I like that's the best. Our unnamed narrator, Jack.
Didn't have a job that required him to fly across the country and transpose time zones
that's
on a
true.
Regular basis. I bet you his sleep would go a lot
probably
easier.
Probably would. Yeah.
I'm sure that doesn't help him. And two, he has a bona fide mental illness.
He does, which as we see as the movie goes on.
His horrible, he should have quit his job and he should have quit his doctor. And this movie doesn't, it just ends.
But of course,
he just
then
gets
you
a good
have
night's
no
sleep
story,
and
so.
Goes to bed. And
so he goes to these support groups and he pretends to have testicular cancer or parasites or whatever. Just
bloodborne
because,
parasites.
Yeah, bloodborne parasites.
He pretends to have sickle cell anemia.
He does,
He's the only white person in the group. Did you see that?
Well, the woman he meets pretends to have testicular cancer. She says, technically, I have more right to be here because you still have your testicles.
It's true.
Yeah, which in a weird logic is true. But he finally gets to sleep because of this. But then Marla Singer, this woman, walks into his life. She's going to the same groups. She doesn't have these diseases either. So he hates her. But it's obvious he's attracted to her, at least obsessed with her, but he hates her too.
Yeah.
So she starts going to these groups. They make a deal, blah, blah, blah.
You do half, I'll do half.
Uh-huh. And then he's traveling. And then on a plane, while he's fantasizing about the plane crashing, because that's the kind
Which
of guy
seems
he
normal.
is. Yeah.
It's up until that point in the movie. I watched this movie today.
Mm-hmm.
Up until like that spot, it's pretty. There's some effects. Like they do this.
There's some incredible effects in this movie.
There's like the opening is like brain pathways. And
it's so pulling. We'll get to that.
Sure. And the opening scene when they show the IKEA catalog come to life in his house.
That's incredible.
But it's still subtle.
Right.
It is incredible.
He's like walking. He's walking through his apartment and. Then the descriptions, as in an IKEA cag, pop up, and he walks sort of both in front and behind them, like right. He's walking through the catalog.
And the line with the price and the description.
It's just
and
very, reads, it's like really so cool. Imaginative.
But it's also subtle.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that plane explodes, and it's like, I think it's kind of underappreciated.
It's
how
a great
awesome
plane effect, yeah.
Yeah, and then it just cuts and it's gone.
And he kind of wakes up from this little fantasy, and he's sitting next to a man, played by Brad Pitt, who introduces himself as Tyler Durden, who makes soap. Jack gets back. I'm really covering a lot of plot to get to the point, but Jack gets back to his apartment. His apartment is blown up because he assumes the gas was left on, the refrigerator coil sparked, and boom, blew it up. So he calls Tyler, sort of to stay with him, sort of just to go get a beer. They go get a beer, and then Tyler says, in return for him letting stay for him, he wants to do him a favor, and he says, I want you to hit me as hard as you can.
And he punches him in the ear.
But he goes, you punch me in the ear. And it's and long story short, you know, he says, how can you know what kind of man you are if you've never been in a fight? They fight. They become fast friends. And gradually this fighting grows to the titular fight club where other men start fighting. This becomes the new support group. It expands as Tyler gets sort of more charismatic and powerful.
Yeah.
And he starts what they call Project Mayhem, where they do these crazy pranks like demagnetize all the videotapes in a store. Couldn't do that now. they put bird food on top of like a luxury car dealership, so the cars are covered in pigeon
That's
shit
great.
The next day.
Very clever.
They do. They replace the airline safety cards with like little graphics of people screaming and pushing children out of the way on the planes and stuff. And it keeps escalating and escalating.
It starts off as a support group, which becomes like a
prank group.
Yeah, yeah. Which becomes a terrorist group.
It becomes a terrorist group. And then Tyler wants to, in the end, what Tyler wants to do is he wants to blow up a bunch of buildings where all the credit records are held. So everyone will start at zero.
All right.
You're saying that doesn't make any sense.
Let's continue. I have criticism, but we'll get there.
Okay. And here's where we're getting in spoilers. So if you don't want to do anything.
You just outlined like the entire plot. So listen, folks.
I know. But the big spoiler is coming because our unnamed narrator, he felt it's gone too far. Tyler is too much of a charismatic person. He's a terrorist leader. So he wants to stop him. He's trying to find out where Tyler is. He goes crisscrosses back and forth across the country. Because now fight clubs are all over the country. And he finally stumbles onto a guy at a bar in, I think, Seattle. And he's like, you were just here. Security's as tight as a drum. This big terrorist plane they've got going. And he's like, wait, who am I? And he says, you're Mr. Durden. And he realizes that he and Tyler Durden are the same person. Isn't, and all the time he was thought he was sleeping, he was being Tyler
Durden. He's just continuing insomnia.
Mm-hmm. So there is no sort of Brad Pitt in the movie. It's all Ed Norton doing everything.
So, I have 1,000 things to unpack for you. So let me just, As I think of them, I'll bring them up to you. Is it possible, and you're going to say no, and this might be a bad start, but is it possible that Marla is also in his head?
I've heard that theory, and I thought about that watching it, and I don't think so. I see why that's like an appealing theory.
Do you think it's intentionally like ambiguous?
Well, but there are too many scenes where people react to Marla.
Sure.
Marla, like in the beginning, Marla goes, she steals a bunch of jeans from a laundromat and sells them. The woman gives her the money.
Yeah.
There are scenes when they grab Marla and take her prisoner.
Yeah. She's in a restaurant near the end. He says, get on the bus. Please get on the
right.
bus.
And you see the people descend on her on the bus.
She asks about the food and she orders something.
And he goes, clean food, please. Because it's established early on when he and Tyler are becoming buddies. There's tons of narration in this movie.
Yeah.
And Tyler, like, you know, he pees in the food and all this stuff. And
So I think you're right. I also think that's a fair way to say it is an appealing option.
It is. And I've heard people say that. I don't think the movie works as well if she's not real.
He dresses Tyler Durden in the same clothes as her, which is interesting. Like he's in his he wears feather boas and he wears fur coats. Like Tyler Durden dresses like Marla.
Well, similar. Although Marla wears a lot of just little black dresses and stuff too.
Kind of, but when she's like just looking crazy and she's always smoking and she's always munching on food. I mean, they're similar. Like, the, yeah, but I think he what he likes about Marla, he projects.
Well, I think that's a real possibility. What he likes about Marla, because what happens is he doesn't like Marla, and Marla starts having an affair with Tyler earlier on in the movie, and he's kind of bitter about this.
Yeah.
Then he realizes that he was the one having the affair with Marla. And so if you watch it a second time, there's a lot of scenes where Marla's giving him weird looks when he's kind of being mean to her.
Yeah.
And you realize it's because
he's nuts.
He's nuts.
And she calls him out. She says it too. She's like, you're out of your mind.
Yeah. And you don't realize why until a certain point.
Yeah.
He realizes he's Tyler Durden.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that there's a scene when
you're going to say the one in the kitchen.
No, I was going to say the revelation scene in the hotel room when he calls Marla and he says, like, say my name. And she's like, Tyler Durden, Tyler Durden. And then he hangs up the phone. Edward Norton does. And Brad Pitt's sitting there in the room with him. He goes, you talked to her, didn't you? You talked about us. And then you see Fincher's so good at doing these info dumps where you see select scenes from the movie.
Like the acid on the hand.
Right. But you see
the base or whatever.
Yeah. The lie he puts on his hand. Because, yeah, there's a scene early on where Tyler puts lie on the narrator's hand and it burns him. And then he puts vinegar on it.
I think that's the first one we see. So he goes back and shows that scene.
Yeah.
And it's just him.
And it's just him alone. And then you see the original fight. This is the one criticism I kind of agree with. But if you watch the movie, you just have to go with it. In the movie, originally it's established these two guys are fighting. And other guys like, hey, can I join in or something? Which you can almost kind of believe.
Yeah.
If it's one insane guy beating himself up in a parking lot, I can't imagine anyone's going to go, hey, can I join in next? And which is what it was, because there was no Tyler.
Right.
He was him hitting himself.
You know, I almost – there's a lot of other stuff that I don't buy. But I almost buy that only in that they show how good he is and effective he is at fighting himself later with his boss.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and yeah, because there's a scene where he's going to get fired. And he fakes he beats himself up.
And then fakes an HR suit.
And makes it look like his boss did it. But there's a scene, there's a narrative, it pauses in that scene and he says, for some reason, I thought about my first fight with Tyler. Because he's fighting himself again.
It's the same thing. It's perfect.
Yeah.
That's very, very nice.
But you see a lot of scenes where you previously saw Brad Pitt doing something and now you see Ed Norton saying the same lines or in the same position as Brad Pitt.
Working, so that means Ed Norton, Unnamed Jack, is... A film projectionist at night.
Unnamed Jack. Maybe that's what we should say.
Unnamed Jack. He's a waiter at night. He's a, you know, that means he's doing all these things.
And there is a part where Meatloaf plays this guy named Bob who's got steroids. So he has these giant breasts. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. It's a funny little touch because everything they say makes sense. He was a steroid user.
Mm-hmm.
He needed to get off the steroids. So they had to artificially supplement him with some testosterone, but they gave him too much. So his body produced
estrogen. Yeah.
I buy it. Okay.
And he's the narrator's friend before he meets Tyler because they meet him in a support group.
Testicular.
And then he later dies. He's like the one who dies in
Robert Paulson.
Robert Paulson.
Yeah.
And but he said there's a scene early on when he says he's talking to Edward Norton. And this is before we know the revelation. And he says they say he only sleeps 1 hour a night. And if he does only sleep hour a night because he's Brad Pitt or he's Ed Norton the whole time.
I saw just recently we talked about the Nightmare on Elm Street remake a couple episodes ago. And one of the pros I read about that, I read about it after the fact because, you know, we ended the podcast and I went home and I read the Wikipedia. And one of the things I read was that in that movie that there's this concept of micro sleep.
Yeah.
Where at a certain point, when you've just been awake too long, your body can't, it just has to shut down.
Yeah.
It can't stay awake anymore. And so you have these little micro bursts of like where just in your days where you're out.
Yeah.
And they play with that in that Nightmare on Elm Street movie. And I was thinking about that watching Fight Club going, he has no idea.
No, he doesn't.
He's so tired. He has no idea what's happening. He's out of control. And he has got a mental illness. So there's definitely.
And there's that scene near the beginning when he's narrating, he's saying like, if you wake up in a different place at a different time, could you wake up a different person? And he's on the skywalk in an airport going and the other direction Brad Pitt is going.
And Fincher held on to Brad Pitt. It was like,
too
okay,
long.
Got it.
Did you spot the subliminals?
There's like 10 of them. Because
Tyler shows up long before he shows up in the movie.
All sorts of times. They just like little, like the one frame clicking. Yeah.
And then
I did
they,
notice that.
They also, and when he's in the hotel room and he's talking about single serving friends and all this, and they have a clip on the TV and it says, "Welcome from the staff." Brad Pitt's one of them.
Oh, I didn't see
that. He's like the one on the end.
That's
Tyler Durden's one on the end.
I was looking right at that today. I didn't notice that. That's, that's really good.
He goes, "Welcome."
That line, Brad, see, I kind of always think of Brad Pitt as a dummy. I know it's probably an unfair. I just think of him as like kind of dumb, but good looking. So people like him, personable. I think of him as the guy from Burn After Reading.
Oh, no, he's not.
I know, but I just, that's how
that
I think
guy
of him.
Is so dumb.
I know. But in this movie, Brad Pitt is believable. Is like, he says, you know, you're by far the most interesting single serving friend I ever had. And Brad Pitt doesn't respond. And Ed Norton goes, you know, because I get, and he goes,
I get it. Yeah.
I get it. How's that working out for you?
Yeah. I mean, because like Ed Norton, and who is a great actor, he plays this guy, kind of the average guy, who's a pretty clever guy.
Yeah.
But Brad Pitt, Affable. Tyler is just a notch above.
Yeah.
And you can see why they cast Brad Pitt, because you need someone with movie star charisma to be Tyler Durden. I mean, you have to just follow this guy to the ends of the earth.
In Seven, you pointed out that the movie gets brighter and brighter as time goes on, which it's got to be a metaphor for something. But in this movie,
I think it's just Fincher saying, you think it's bright, but here's Gwyneth Paltrow's head in the box.
maybe.
Although nowadays, that's a happy ending. You know, she's so goddamn annoying.
but okay. You might be able to say, well, the crimes are ending. It's lifting. So daylight's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In this movie, Brad Pitt gets tanner and buffer and
shaves his head.
More eccentric. Like his clothing gets crazy.
He's wearing like pimp glasses and all
that. By the end of the movie,
stuff.
Too, he is ripped.
Yeah.
Like I've heard from many of my female friends that Brad Pitt in Fight Club is like their ideal husband.
Well, there's
like,
that's one
their,
scene.
That's their guy.
There's a scene where Norton goes up to the bedroom when Brad Pitt and Marla are having sex.
It's like CGI sex. It's like the Matrix sex.
Well, there's that sex, but there's the other, there's a scene where he knocks on the door and Brad Pitt opens it wearing a giant yellow scrubbing glove for some reason, but he's completely naked otherwise, and it's just cut off. I mean, it's to the millimeter where you wouldn't see something, and he's cut, and it's great because Marla is in the background. She kind of like just fell off the bed, and as the door closes, she goes, "Who are you talking to?" And you realize because there's only one guy there.
He's talking to himself.
He's talking to himself.
But so while Brad Pitt's ripped, Ed Norton keeps getting paler and paler and skinnier. Yeah. He said he stopped eating, like a method acting thing, where by the end of the movie, he's like, he wasn't sleeping on purpose. He wasn't eating on
purpose.
He
looks like,
he looks like hell on purpose. And I love that. And I love that that's not needed, and they didn't need to do that.
Yeah. And I like this movie because
and apparently, by the way, Norton and Pitt came up with that. That was their thing.
Oh, I believe it. If you get the DVD or you listen, there's a commentary track with those
there's
two.
Like four.
Yeah, but there's one with Fincher and those two and Helen Bonham Carter. And Brad Pitt and Norton really, I mean, they believed in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this wasn't just a paycheck. They really liked this movie. They liked what it had to say. And, you know,
I watched that. Now that you say that, I remember Helena Bonham Carter talking about how she had to spend like 2 days faking orgasms.
And, you know, she's like, before this, she was thought of as, I mean, now she's kind of like Tim Burton's crazy girlfriend actress. Right. But she was back when this movie came out.
I think they're married.
Are they married now? But she was known as the Merchant Ivory, like very high crust British movies. You know, that's the kind of movie she was known for. So for her to be in this where she's like just this degenerate punk princess kind of a thing,
it's way against
type. But she's great. I mean, I think they had talked about maybe casting Courtney Love in this, and I'm so glad they didn't.
This is a perfect metaphor to describe what you're saying. She never married Tim Burton, and she's not with him anymore.
I thought they might have
but her first partner for 5 years, if it's just uppity tidy whitey like British guy, can you think of
Hugh Grant?
Kenneth Branagh.
He did
that Denzel Washington and
he did a bunch of Shakespeare movies too, and he did
Love or whatever.
No,
that was.
He did real Shakespeare movies. He did Hamlet.
I know. I didn't mean Shakespeare in Love, but he Much Ado About Nothing.
Right. Yeah.
With Denzel Washington and everybody else, there was 1,000 people. It's not very good either, by the way. I don't like that movie.
I like some kind of. I'm not going to bust them.
No, but it's interesting. Yeah, like a regal, proper. You know,
and she's very British, you know, and everything. And now she's best known as Bellatrix Lestrange from the Harry Potter movies. Yep,
I agree with that.
So, but you know, I can't remember if we mentioned this last episode or not. But one thing about Fight Club, I think we should address is it's a movie very much about men and what it's like to be a young man and what being a man means.
I mean,
kind of a thing.
An extended monologue in testicular cancer support group where we're still men, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
They're asking about
and there's,
that.
And there's a lot about that. And what about a fight? You know, is a man someone who fights and this and that? And
he asks Ed Norton, have you ever been in... I'm piggybacking. I'm not trying to cut you off.
Yeah, no.
Have you ever been in a fight? He says, no. And he goes, that's a good thing. He goes, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, we should know. Yeah. So what I was going to say is this movie's kind of been embraced by a certain... I worry because I really like this movie, but I think some of the people... And it's the easiest thing to say. Like, they like it for the wrong reasons. But I think Fight Club has a reputation of being like kind of lunkhead, men's rights guys, you know.
I've heard that from you, and I've read that online. I don't get that.
I mean, I hope it's... I mean, but this movie, as all the things we've described, what I want to say more than anything, this movie is a comedy. It's a dark comedy, but it's... And it might not be the kind of comedy where you laugh, laugh, laugh.
It's got a lot of bright moments, like just sudden little flare-ups of like...
There's lots of jokes, and it's... I mean, and it, I think it builds to like a big punchline at the end. You know, I mean, the punchline is a bunch of buildings go down.
So,
okay, like, Billy doesn't like the ending. So
I don't like the last
talk about
third
it.
Of the, for, basically, from the moment he starts his little like crisscrossing the country trying to locate Tyler moment, I think I'm out from that
really?
Point
I
forward.
Like that part because I think that's when it kind of jumps up a notch.
The movie's so clever and funny, and there's these ideas, like there's a lot of ideas being bounced around about like what it is to do this and society and advertising and growing up, and there's a lot of like deep conceptual stuff, and then from the plane ride on it becomes just like a silly caper movie almost. I don't know, like that's not the right word, but
no, but I mean I know people agree with you. I mean, I can see that. I like it though because I think I like a movie that creates its own world, and I like how this movie has created a world where Fight Club has become this nationwide underground movement, and Edward Norton is like the only guy who can save the day.
Yeah.
And I like bringing back to sort of what you were talking about, what he looks like at the end and how it's a comedy. I like the fact that when he saves the day running into this building to fight Brad Pitt, he's in his underwear because these cops who are members of Fight Club – They were gonna castrate him.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're like, Mr. Durden, this is great. This is gonna establish it. And he's like, no, don't do it. I told you to, you know, I'm telling you not to do it. And they said, you said you would say that. And I like that stuff.
I think it gets too wonky.
It's too wonky.
Like, I don't know, Benny Hill, like,
comedy.
The movie's so serious, and I know it's
funny. I don't think it's serious at all.
But it presents itself as serious, and then it's like it unmasks itself. I don't know. All right, but fair
I mean, in my take, I think from the opening shot, from the opening credits, which is it's a CGI thing where it starts off like at his brainstem, and it kind of the whole you don't even realize where it is. You know, if you're in outer space or whatever, but it's moving essentially through his brain, down his nose, up the barrel of a gun, and then they pull back, and you see Tyler has a gun in Edward Norton's mouth.
And like the first line is like, I know it's stupid, but I wonder if that gun's been cleaned.
Yeah, I wonder if that gun's... See, that's why I think right from the beginning, it's a dark comedy,
yeah,
but it's a comedy.
It's interesting. The whole movie is, I mean, 100% Ed Norton's like whatever train of thought he's got going on at the time.
Right. He'll stop and go back and...
It's kind of funny. Every scene starts with him like kind of going, and then there was this one time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just this like... It's like he's talking to a therapist or something.
He kind
it's
of,
just
yeah.
unloading.
And it's like, I mean, I love movies. We talked about JFK, and I like how Oliver Stone, more than anything, I like how he'll use any technique he thinks will work to tell a story.
Sure.
And I like this movie because I think Fincher does the same thing. There are flash forwards and flashbacks and little, you know, little quick cuts to stuff. And he'll stop and he'll talk about how Tyler Durden splices pornographic frames into family films.
Just because there's, it doesn't.
Yeah. And he says like, that's called a cigarette burn. And it's the little
the blue
thing. By the way, you know, I used to work in I worked at the downtown when they had a thing called Storefront Cinema in Rockford, and they showed art movies and indie films and stuff. And I worked there and it was too real. So you had to switch projectors.
Yeah.
So I knew what a cigarette burn was.
I'm always obsessed with how that doesn't get screwed up. I don't get it.
It's all in the well, now it's all digital.
Yeah, sure.
But
sure.
Back then it was, I mean, there were projectors unions for a reason. It was a trained profession.
It seems like the kind of thing where like you screw it up by half a second and the movie's got to jump in it. Like
most people don't notice, but literally that's how you have two projectors. And I would stand there. I would know essentially when it was coming. There would be one cigarette burn to let you know, and then another 2 seconds there'd be another one, and you just switch off one and switch on the other.
So this movie didn't come directly after Seven.
No, the game is in between.
The game, and I don't know anything about the game. I don't think I do.
Michael Douglas. It's great. It's like an. It's Fincher's movies are all good.
That's one. I'm going to email myself that too.
I love the game.
I wouldn't mind watching that maybe tonight because I'm on a Fincher kick. And I wanted to say that I thought that Fight Club is kind of a companion film to Seven. And I realized that I don't have this. This isn't fleshed out.
Okay.
Please dismiss me.
Hit me with it.
He used Nine Inch Nails.
Right.
For Seven. He used Dust Brothers mm-hmm. for this.
I've got this soundtrack. It's wonky.
It's very, it's actually kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I like it. It's not what I would listen to in the
No,
car.
I wouldn't either, but it's it fits the movie.
He uses the opening. It completely establishes we're in the brain on this one where before where it like tells you the secret without you realizing.
We're in his brain. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's all taking place in his brain.
It's the same thing in Seven. I mean, you're seeing the secret. This is the serial killer making his stuff right now, but you don't know. I don't know. It's not perfect.
I know what you're saying.
I just get the sense that they follow similar creations.
They are more alike than the game. The game, the way it's filmed, is a more traditional, think of like a big Hollywood movie. It's got Michael Douglas as the star. It's great, though.
Michael Douglas... I think of him as a joke. I always think of him as like silly because I think I saw him in all these. You know who's the guy? Ed. He's the Capcom in Apollo 13. Ed Harris. Ed.
Yeah. Ed,
is that Ed Harris?
Ed Harris. Yeah.
Ed Harris is in a lot of like sleazy HBO like Skinamaxy kind of things. He's just
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris has shown up in like all sorts
He's
of silly
the
like
right stuff in Westworld,
seductress kind of movies. I mean, I'm
Ed Harris. I think you may be thinking of somebody else.
Ed Harris, right? Ed Harris from No, I'm thinking of Ed Harris for sure.
I think you're insane.
Nope.
He does big movies. He's in The Right Stuff, one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw him in all these like.
But what does this have to do with Michael Douglas?
Michael Douglas reminds me of that kind of guy. Like he does like. He takes more paycheck movies than he ought to.
I don't know. But here's the thing about Michael Douglas and the game is Michael Douglas he's in Wall Street, he's in Fatal Attraction. Or at least when the game was made, there was nobody better than Michael Douglas at playing a rich asshole. Sure. He was perfect. I mean, and he did it well. That sounds like I'm slamming him, but I'm not. He was like as soon as he shows up in the game, you know what his character is. So you don't have to establish that.
He's in Wall Street, too?
He's in Wall Street. He won the Oscar for Gordon Gekko.
Sure.
But
sure.
In the game, he gets involved in this sort of, it's a game, but where they like mess with his life and he has to go through all these things. He's not sure what's real, what's not. I love the game. All it's right, a really I'll, interesting movie.
I absolutely
movie.
Want to check that out.
And of course, it's just beautifully filmed. I mean, it is just a gorgeous movie to look at.
I'm excited. It's like finding out... I don't know. I guess I just never knew about it. I'm excited to find out like one of my favorite directors has done that.
I think you'll like it. Let me. By the way, speaking of, we talked about Roger Ebert a little bit last episode.
By we, you mean you?
I mean me. I have the Fight Club DVD. I like the little book that came with it because they reprint a bunch of bad reviews of Fight Club in the book to promote it, which is a very Fight Club-y thing to do. But here's what Ebert said: Fight Club is the most frankly. Cheerfully fascist big star movie since Death Wish, another out of theaters episode.
Yeah, which I actually kind of liked.
I know. A celebration of violence in which the heroes write themselves license to drink, smoke, screw, and beat one another up. And Kenneth Turan, who always hates these kind of movies, he's stuck in the mud too, he says, a witless mishmash of whiny infantile philosophizing and bone-crunching violence that actually thinks it's saying something of significance. And
I actually don't I mean, he's a turd for writing that, but it's not that...
Well, I mean, you did either... I can see where he's saying. I don't agree with it. And I think the trouble with Fight Club is people try to read so much into it.
It's like The Matrix.
And it's a comedy. I mean, it has some things to say, but it's not something to build your life on.
Right. And when I was at the I used to work at a library too, man. And I remember there's literal just dozens of books like Take the Red Pill or
right,
whatever.
Exactly.
Like there's all sorts of people always, turn this into like a religion. Yeah. It's like, chill out, guys.
Nerds. And by the way, and for all the people who think like this is a movie about men and how men don't need women and blah, 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 and men, the movie ends with the Project Mayhem worked and all the buildings are blown up. But I love the last shot of this movie because I was like impressed they went this far. The buildings are collapsing. This is pre-9/11, so we could still kind of chuckle at the sight of skyscrapers falling to the ground. And they established nobody was hurt, which I don't know how you do, but anyway, you buy it in this movie. But watching it, holding hands our unnamed narrator and Marla, like in silhouette. So it's almost like a sweet romantic moment.
Yeah.
And they're both, because he's wearing a coat but no pants, and she's wearing like a coat and a skirt.
Dress, yeah.
They look almost like the same person.
Which is sort of feeds into the, is she in his head kind of.
No, I didn't take that. I took into it as like, all this talk about men don't need women and maybe blah, blah, blah. I think, look, a guy and a woman are essentially the same.
Now, Fight Club doesn't say men doesn't need women.
Well, at one point, Brad Pitt says, like, maybe the solution is another woman.
Oh. Hmm. I guess I'd missed that. I never considered it.
I mean,
it.
It's very much a movie. There's no women Fight Clubs.
Yeah, and I know Fincher talked about how it's like, he saw it as like a coming-of-age movie, like The Graduate.
It is. I think that's what it's like. The Graduate is a comedy, a dark comedy, and I think this is like the same thing.
There's, this movie does get very dark, like the scene where they rob, but not really, the...
What do they call it?
Store?
Yeah, the, well, they Raymond Castle. What do they call it?
I don't remember.
Science experiment or something like that.
I mean, they get the guy's license and he wants to be a dentist and he's like...
No, he wants to be a veterinarian.
That's it. Go to school. Go to school Monday. You go right now.
I'm going
to
come back and kill you or something.
And that gets pretty...
It's dark.
Yeah.
But then you see, I love the attention to detail in this movie, because then up in Tyler's room, on the hanging on the back of his door are all these... There's like a dozen driver's license. Like, he's done this a bunch of times to people.
I love that you brought up the attention to detail, because one of my trivia questions later is going to ask you about something that appears in somebody's wall. Just keep that in mind. You can't call me out on this later.
For Fight Club?
No. Okay. We'll get there.
Okay. I mean, I really like this movie. When it first came out, I was just blown away by it, and I still like it a lot. And it's sort of... It's come in and out of fashion, back and then again, but I think it holds up, and I think it's hilarious.
It is really funny. Although, again, the first half is way more funny than the second half.
But I think the second half is almost more of a physical comedy. Like, the first half is kind of like a smart comedy. The second half is almost like a slapstick comedy.
I agree with that. I think that's totally true. It's Leonardo DiCaprio drunkenly or falling down the stairs.
Yeah, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'll buy that. Did you read the book?
I did read the book, Chuck Palahniuk. By the way, it's an interesting thing if you watch this movie and, you know, with all the themes of men. I believe Chuck Palahniuk came out as gay after the movie came out.
Oh, I didn't know. I knew he was gay, but
I think he didn't come out until after. Although, if you read the book and see the movie, it's not exactly a huge surprise.
Yeah. And the book, it's I want to make sure real quick. I'm just scanning real quick just to make sure that we're okay. So, yeah, I want to make sure we're not like, you know, saying something that's not
no
trivial.
I think
he's out, okay,
yeah. And he's a very I kind of went through a period where I read like everything of his, and then I'm like, okay, I've had enough for a while. Kind of backed off.
And he's pretty obsessed with like gender politics and gender
identity. Oh yeah,
Invisible Monsters is nuts.
I read that right after Fight
Club.
I did
the same thing,
because I actually had the novel Fight Club, and I had it, and I waited until I saw the movie, and then I read the book, and then I think I read Invisible Monsters maybe before Fight Club.
Really?
Because I knew I wanted to read Fight Club, but not before the movie.
Yeah.
So then I said, well, I'll read this, because I think that was the only other book of his that was out.
Oh, I didn't know that. It's like once you find one thing, like a director's films, you want to see some
friend of the show, Matt Torman, got me an autographed copy of Rant at a Chuck Palahniuk book signing.
That's
once.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice. Thank you, Matt.
You guys went to that without me. How was it?
I didn't go. No, Matt got it for me. I couldn't go that night.
Man. Oh, I was thinking of Klosterman.
Klosterman.
I was thinking of Klosterman signing.
We did go to that.
That was devastated. I was like, you guys were like, you coming? I was like, what are you talking about? Nobody.
Why did you go?
Nobody told me. I had to work. I worked late shifts because you jerks got to work 9 to 5. I worked till 8 or whatever that night. I never went home.
I know.
Nah. He meets Tyler Durden on a nude beach.
Yeah.
And they give each other massages.
Yeah.
They're not undertones. They're very much overtones.
It's not subtext. It's text.
Yeah. It's pretty. And I couldn't help, now that I watch it again today, I was thinking about it. It's not in there. I mean, it's a little in there because there's lots of scenes where Brad Pitt is like taking a bath by himself. And,
right.
Ed Norton's just like on the can and they're just hanging out talking. Yeah. Which historical figure would you fight whatever? It? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just seems like two really close buddies. It doesn't seem, there's no pretext. I mean,
well, you know,
he's jealous of him.
Right. And I didn't come up with this theory. I mean, there's, you know, some people say that the fights in Fight Club, you know, you could take them as symbolizing something else, if you know what I mean.
I don't. Why don't you explain it to me?
Well, you know, it'd be SEX, which gives a whole nother level to the first fight that Edward Norton had.
Yeah, they're drunk.
With himself.
Yeah, outside. That's funny.
I don't. I mean, you know, and but I mean, you could read all this into it. The movie is what it is.
The last big theory I want to ask you for, is there a chance that this is all in his head? That he is a crazy insomniac and that...
I mean, you could say that about like any movie.
But that's a cop-out. In this particular movie, in this, I don't think,
okay.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think there's too... I mean, there's no evidence that it is. The big twist is that Tyler Durden in his head. There's no evidence that everything else is in his head.
Right. Well, when the buildings collapse, it's so extreme,
it's dreamlike.
And dreamlike and silly, and there's sort of you've been fed all this evidence throughout the movie that he's not sleeping and that he sleeps 1 hour a night, and I wonder, I didn't pay careful enough attention, but I wonder if there's something there where our narrator's unreliable, and so
right.
how far out does
the definition of an unreliable.
How far narrator. Out does that extend?
I don't. I mean. I don't see it. I think the movie only works if some of it is true.
Yeah.
But I think the Tyler Durden is the big thing that's not true.
Yeah. And I'll buy that too. I read about it and thought, I wonder if that's possible. Did I miss anything else in this movie?
I don't know. I do know that there's a great episode of 30 Rock where Liz Lemon, the Tina Fey character, she meets this, I can't remember if it's like a book club or something, and she can't figure out why all the women are so successful, and then she realizes it's a fight club, and they're having their own fight club. And there's also an episode of Futurama where the professor, at one point, he just walks out of me and goes, gotta go, fight club, and it just leaves.
I like, how about the scene where the owner of the bar comes down and is like, what are you doing in my bar?
I'm Lou. Lou's Tavern, I'm Lou. I just watched that scene. Oh, and he beats the crap. Here's the thing about, because we talked about Seven last week and how there's not a lot of on-screen violence. There's a lot of on-screen violence in this movie.
I tweeted that out today. This movie is gross.
It's gross.
It's gross.
Well, I wouldn't use the word gross because I'm not a 12-year-old girl, but
there's a lot of blood and crunching bones and just like the part where like somebody asks him if he likes, I think he's like, do you like the cobalt blue? And he just opens his mouth full of bloody teeth. It's just
I like that. Here's the, we should establish this, and I don't think Billy will disagree. I have a quantum level higher tolerance for movie violence than Billy does.
Than humans do. Well, than other people do.
I've watched a lot of
You're
movies.
Disgusting. You're disgusting.
No.
You were like cheering for the bear in that.
Oh, that's a great scene. I flipped HBO just to watch that scene.
You think like you were like really, you're moved your forward in your seat and got better
that's
posture.
That's what I paid to see. That bear scene in Revenant. It was great.
I wanted to crawl into my hoodie and fall asleep and just numb it away. It was awful.
It was great. People watch it. It's great.
I'm absolutely.
But there,
like,
but the scene with Lou when, because he beats the hell out of Brad Pitt, and then Brad Pitt like goes on top of him, he's like bleeding into his face, and he says, "You don't know where I've been. You don't know where I've been."
That's just Ed Norton's like, what's that? What's the word? That's a agoraphobia is when you don't want to leave your house. What's it when you're afraid of dirt?
Oh, I don't know. Clinophobia.
You won't shake your hand.
Oh, I know. Yeah, like OCD
word?
Or something.
No, but there's a word. Whatever.
I don't know.
Afraid of dirt.
But who's afraid? You lose Edward Norton. Nobody's afraid of dirt in this movie. Look at the filth they live in.
Is it mysophobia?
And that's afraid of mice.
No, it's not. You idiot.
It should be.
Whatever. Ed Norton is worried about the cleanliness of the gun, and when he's dripping blood into Lou's mouth, he's like, you don't know where this blood's been. He's worried about
it's
that.
It's him, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but no, he's like threatening Lou. He's like, you don't know where I've been.
Right.
Meaning what disease I've got flowing through my body.
That is an Ed Norton staple. Also, speaking of gross, man, I meant unnamed Jack staple. When they check out the, all right, there's a car and it's blown up and Ed Norton's explaining his job. And he says, like, the two other guys that are with them are like, this
they're
guy,
like the most cynical bastards ever.
The guy must have been fat because look at the way his skin
melted
to
on the thing.
Seat and they like zoom in
and
on
he's
it.
Like
it's just gross.
Teenager's braces are wrapped around the ashtray. Yeah. Might make a good anti-smoking ad. And it's like,
he said it's a new car and it's clearly like a Grand Victoria.
Yeah.
It's not a new car at all.
But, I mean, Polonick's stuff is, if you read it, it's very visceral. He always has something in his books where you're just like reading it, you're like, oh. And this is kind of that.
Yeah, agreed. I feel like I'm rambling here. Let me wrap up this movie. Is there anything else that you want to talk about? I know we both, I think we mentioned once that they beat up a Volkswagen because they
thought that was the boomer selling
they beat up modern Volkswagen.
Yeah, the new Beetle.
Well, they're beating up all the luxury cars. So they come to one like, I don't know, it's a Honda, some just regular car, and they're like, no, not that one. And then they beat up. And this movie, especially in that mid-period when they're doing all the little Project Mayhem pranks, they just feel like boys out having fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like fun. And
don't they release like giant balls downtown? Like,
yes. It's called Operation Grande Latte, and they're releasing a giant modern art, like civic art, corporate art into a Starbucks or something. And that's where Meatloaf gets killed.
You're right.
He gets shot, and his name was Robert Paulson. And it's like, that's when Edward Norton sees everything kind of turning against him, because he's like, this was a man, you know, his name was Robert Paulson. And they don't see like how crazy it's getting. They say like, we must remember his name.
They're inventing
his
rules
name
on
was
the fly.
Robert Paulson. Yeah.
I get it. In death, he has a name, but in life, he doesn't.
And it's great because he goes to, a while later, he goes out to this place in Seattle to this bar, and like the kitchen help is just in a room, and he looks and they're going, his name was Robert Paulson. His name. And you realize like how far everything goes.
Yeah. Which is where I ask.
That's where you lose it, but that's where I really start to love it.
And I ask, that's funny. I guess that's just what we bring to it, but mm-hmm. that's kind of where I start to wonder if it's really happening too.
No, I think it is. I think I think it's supposed to be crazy that this became this national movement, but that's what I like. I like a movie that if it's just a movie, so why not tell a big crazy story?
Fair enough. I it's hard to argue with you. Also, this is my response to you.
Nerd! What was that from?
It's The Simpsons.
Oh, thank you. I don't know what that even means.
Will gave me a Tom Hanks.
Oh, yes. Let's tell him the nice thing I did for you.
It was really nice. Tom Hanks in The Simpsons movie.
Yeah, that's right. He is in the movie, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what this is.
Okay, yeah.
This is the U.S. government has lost all credibility, so they've decided to borrow some of mine.
Tom Hanks.
And some kid walks up. You rustle my hair, Mr. Hanks. Oh, sure thing, Timmy.
The whole Tom Hanks. Yeah, By the way.
You gave me a mini figurine of Tom Hanks from The Simpsons movie. It's like 2 inches tall.
Mm-hmm. Tom Hanks, Cleveland Indians fan.
I appreciate it. Yeah, best actor of all time.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but he seems like a great guy.
Okay, let's play some trivia.
There's a lot of things you don't know anything about, Daddy. Things you wouldn't understand. Things you couldn't understand. Things you shouldn't understand.
I don't understand.
And we're back, everybody. Let's do some trivia, Will.
Let's do some trivia. Do you want me to explain the rules?
No, I don't think... No, you should.
Okay. Each week, Billy and I pick a movie. We tell each other the movie. We go home, we do a little homework, come up with some trivia questions, come back and quiz the person on the movie they chose. Winner gets to pick next week's movie.
I picked the first Lord of the Rings movie.
That's right. Which I think I started watching years ago, and it's still running.
Yeah, that's funny. I get that joke. I mean, it's very original, and I'm surprised nobody made that in advance.
Just because it's not original doesn't mean it's not true. And I picked
doesn't mean it's funny.
Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead, a movie I have never seen, but I once wrote a newspaper headline for. I said, zombie flick eats brains, tickles funny bone.
Oh, my God. And what did you do after you were fired from that headline?
I graduated.
I would say, we talk about David Fincher and how he's, you know, all the movies he's made are great or at least interesting. Edgar Wright, I think, with 4 movies under his belt, is batting 1,000.
His movies feel so much smaller than David Fincher's.
Well, they are, but his are out and out comedies.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. I think Edgar Wright's movies are great.
I've only seen the end of the world bar movie thing.
The World's End?
The World's End, which is fine, but it's again, maybe it's just me. I don't really
I think it's one of the best movies of the 21st century.
I don't love physical like silliness. And that movie, like Pierce Brosnan turns out to be an alien. They're all aliens.
They're all aliens.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
All right.
You're crazy.
Yeah,
what about Scott Pilgrim? You like Scott Pilgrim?
I really like Scott Pilgrim.
That's great.
And that movie is very stylish.
I would agree. I think all his movies are worth watching. But anyway.
My favorite Scott Pilgrim moment is when the first boyfriend, he's Indian.
Yeah.
And there's like a sort of an Indian themed fight.
Uh-huh.
Like it's very
They're dancing.
Bouncy.
It's a Bollywood kind of a thing.
It is. That's so good.
It's great.
It's real. All right.
You should read that comic book. You would like it.
Yeah, I would love to. I still have to read. I'm sorry. You give me stuff and I don't
What'd
follow
I give
up
you to
it.
Read?
You gave me My Chemical Romance.
The Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
No, read Scott Pilgrim. I mean, that's step one of a who knows how long it'll last series. So,
Shaun of the Dead.
Okay.
Question one. And I want to say that
Last week, I tried to stick. Billy destroyed me.
But you accused me, much like Donald Trump.
Oh, now that's low.
Rigging the election.
That is low.
I think I stuck more to plot points in this one.
Just stuff that's in the movie.
Is the first one off the bat, not in the movie. Just deal with it.
Okay.
Based on this movie.
Yes.
Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright were offered cameos right away based on the work of this movie.
Land of the Dead.
It was.
George A. Romero loved it. Yes. Land of the Dead is an interesting movie too, but it's much more serious.
That feels right in line with the other things we did. I don't know.
Maybe I just know more about this movie.
Fair enough.
Okay.
1-0.
Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, is based on the works, of course, of J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah.
What does J.R.R. stand for?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know.
Can you give me the J?
I'm sure it's John, but
yes.
I don't.
Can you give me the R, first R?
No.
It's Ronald.
I didn't know.
The third one is a killer. It's a rule, R-E... U E L.
I would never have. I have no
there
idea. That's very interesting. I always thought those guys, JP, I like a lot. There's a GM, JP Riccardi. Like, I think it's a cool sounding thing. I never think about what the original name are. Usually I just figure those people are.
There's like George R. R. Martin.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen those epic rap battles?
They have
a point where they have J.R. Tolkien says to George R. He says, "You even stole my RR." He says, "You're a pirate. You've even stole my RR.
It seems so lowbrow for you to watch those.
I think they're kind of funny.
Does Allie watch them and you got hooked or what?
Filth? No, I can't show those to Allie. They're swearing all over them.
1-0. Question two. Sean tells Liz that he's going to take her to, quote, the place that does all the fish. He opens up the phone book and he looks up the restaurant. What's it called?
The place that does all the fish.
It's called the place that does all the fish.
I know. That's a great
fish.
Joke. See, I love that. Attention to detail in Edgar Wright's movies.
Very clever.
Okay. Speaking of J.R.R. Tolkien, who is the only cast member in these movies to have actually met J.R.R. Tolkien and read all the books?
Christopher Lee.
Right.
Boom. Christopher Lee, who just died. R.I.P.
Yes.
Chris.
Definitely R.I.P. Chris, because he was a movie legend.
And he had very strong opinions about this movie. He's been in previous versions of it, like where he knew all the concept art that had been drawn for. I mean, he was like their onboard scholar.
I mean, Christopher Lee was like an assassin in World War II.
Yeah, I think you're right. He was a spy.
He was a spy and who had killed people, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, for the British Royal Navy or something.
He did like a heavy metal band. He was in a James Bond villain. He's in the awful prequels, but he is in the Star Wars movies. He played Dracula. He played the Frankenstein monster. He played the Mummy.
He's in 1,000 like low tier movies too.
Well,
right?
He's in the Hammer movies, which are good movies. Okay. He's in The Wicker Man, which is one of the all time great British horror movies. And he had like the greatest voice ever.
He's in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory remake, you know.
Oh, I didn't see that.
He's Willy Wonka's dad.
I love Christopher Lee.
He's a dentist.
The mere fact that there is a character of Willy Wonka's dad in the movie, that's...
Who's a dentist who made Willy Wonka like excessively floss.
You know what makes a character fascinating? When you know every single thing about him.
Yeah. No,
just like Lord Vader. Isn't he better that we know... That he was Anakin Skywalker.
Listen, you may not think so, but I understand and detect sarcasm.
I just want to be sure.
Question 3.
Yes.
2-1. You're up. What is Sean's last name?
Riley.
You read the damn IMDb trivia.
I did.
I tried to go easier on you this time, and you're going to get these all because come from the same source.
Okay. Let's see.
It's not even mentioned in the movie. It's actually on
a
poster.
It's on a poster, yeah. It's on his DJing poster.
I'm going to lose this one.
I've seen this movie like 50 times.
All right.
Okay, Andy Serkis played Gollum.
Gollum.
Gollum, whatever.
What's wrong with
Gollum,
you?
Gollum, Gollum. I'm a nerd, but I'm not a nerd in this direction. What other Peter Jackson movie did he star in?
King Kong.
Right.
I'm so sorry. I thought The Prestige too, but that's not Peter.
That's
Jackson.
Not Peter Jackson. He's on the ship, and he's of course Kong.
Oh, I didn't know he was Kong.
He's Kong. Yeah.
Do you know that I've never made it to the end of Kong?
There are some great things in Peter Jackson's Kong. The ape. You really buy the relationship between the ape and Anne, the woman. I mean, it feels a lot more fleshed out. However, there are some terrible parts in it, and it is like an hour and a half too long.
Yeah. He got addicted to that.
I mean, I know you're not a fan of the original, but it gets in and it gets out.
I have so many regrets and retrospective opinions I want to talk. We need to do like a one episode.
We should do a recap show.
I just want to talk about, like, maybe we can break them by decade or something.
Anytime you want to do it.
Room and maybe we can do like a quick fire, because we've done like 63 movies.
Yeah,
now.
We've done a ton.
We could talk a minute per movie and have an episode, because there are ones that I feel bad about not liking. There's ones I feel stronger than ever about. Like,
all right.
Like the 70s car chase, French Connection. I hate that movie.
Really?
I think that movie sucks. And but some of them I feel terrible about, like what's the train one? Greg Stanley liked it a lot too. Or Ben Stanley liked it. I'm sorry, I mixed up my Stanley brothers.
Oh, Taken Pelham 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, I think that movie's better than I gave it. I have some revised opinions. I've seen them a couple times later, and I don't know. I feel like a jerk.
Okay, well, we should do. Let's do a show.
All right. Okay. So question four.
So it's
3-2. You've gotten all three right, and I've missed one.
Okay. Do I get a point off for mispronouncing Gollum?
Yeah, Gollum. I'm. This might be poorly phrased, so just bear with me.
Okay.
When Sean is heading to the shop for the first time,
mm-hmm.
a worker on the street is listening to the radio. The newscast mentions a space probe that unexpectedly re-entered Earth's atmosphere and broke up over England. It's a reference to something.
I did not get from the IMDb page. I knew this one. It's a reference to, in Night of the Living Dead, that you hear a report of a space probe, I want to say from Venus maybe, and they never come out and say it, but it's hinted maybe that's what caused the dead to come back to life.
I tricked you. The real question is, what year did Night of the Living Dead come out in?
68.
Oh, damn it.
Did you really trick me?
No.
Oh, that was a good trick if you did. I lured you down a path. It would have been great if you had never actually asked the question. I made up this big answer, but I didn't ask a question.
Four for four.
Okay. I don't know. This one maybe. Okay. No. I'm not going to, because I know you know this one.
Okay.
Because we sort of, you already mentioned you know this one. if this one's too hard, then just call it.
Call foul.
Which cast member was the stepson of the star of the Addams Family TV show? And here's a hint. I once ate dinner next to him at a comic book show in a restaurant.
Okay, so which actor is the stepson of an Addams Family star?
Mm-hmm. But not the movie Addams Family. I want to clarify.
Yeah, not Raul Julia.
Not Raul Julia.
Yeah. So
if you know the guy's name, you're going to get it.
Is it one of the Hobbits? Is one of the Hobbits? I don't know.
The guy playing Gomez Addams in the TV show was John Astin. So it's Sean Astin.
Oh, I didn't know.
What's his name? Jimmy or what's his name? Sammy. Jimmy's my default name whenever Allie asks me anything. What's his name? Jimmy?
Samwise
Ganji. Oh.
I thought it was.
By the way, Samwise Ganji?
Gamji.
Oh, I'm sorry. I take it all back. Gamji.
I just want to point out that Will pantomimed suicide.
I did.
I will continue the rest of the show alone.
It was a gunshot to the head, in case you
spoiler alert, I win trivia.
Oh.
Question five. There's a movie poster hanging up in Sean's living room.
Okay.
It's of a movie we've reviewed on this podcast.
Mm.
It's kind of obscure, but it's a tribute, and it's one that Kevin was still on the show. I don't want to give you any more hints.
Movie poster.
We reviewed it. It's not, I mean, it's not crazy obscure, but it's not Casablanca. I'll give you that, you know?
Okay. It's in Sean's apartment?
Sean's apartment. It's a much more modern movie than that. But that's all. I've given you plenty of hints.
Is it Texas Chainsaw?
No, it's Battle Royale.
Oh, Battle Royale.
Yeah. And I told you earlier, you noticed some stuff on Tyler Durden's wall.
Oh, you did.
So
okay. Oh, Battle Royale. Okay.
Yeah, 4 for 5. I'm out anyway. I can't win.
Yeah, you can't win.
I can't win.
Do I ask you one then?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. There's a scene where they drop the ring, but they didn't want it to bounce on the floor because they thought it would be more impressive if it just kind of fell and landed. How did they stop
magnets.
It from bouncing? That's right.
Magnetic
floor.
Do you know that was like, so whatever. All right. I can play my little nerd clip for me now too. The extended and box set editions of The Lord of the Rings are so fascinating. There are very long featurettes on, you might even call them features, on Weta Works.
You might even call them features. I love that.
On like how Weta Works created the damn chainmail, how Weta Works did this, or how the swords were made, or how the actors were cast, or whatever. And it goes on. There's like 18 hours of content. And it is so fascinating. If you don't have to care about Lord of the Rings, it's fascinating in
how a movie is.
Oh,
like,
I understand.
It's an economy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a city. It takes a village. I mean, for real, there's like 10,000 people involved in making these kind of movies. The guy, there's just one little cameo from the guy who's like, hey, here's the ring. It's my wedding ring. They thought this just looked like what it should look like. And he holds it up. He's like, they made a different color, but I feel really good about how Lord Sauron's ring is. It's my ring.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And it's like that kind of stuff where who cares? It doesn't matter. But,
well, but when
you're watching it, it's like,
that's why I love movies.
I love
because
movies.
There's all that stuff.
Yeah.
And movies are so, there's a long enough history and it covered enough ground that you could spend the rest of your life just exploring the kind of movie you're fascinated with. And you will always find out something new.
There's just so much because so many people, so it's so unpredictable. There's so much work going into
there's
these
tons.
Things. I can see, you know, during that, you know, 18 hours. And by the way, like there's the whole, the good ones, not the stupid Hobbit movies. There's three Blu-ray extended, like it's like 16 discs. It's preposterous. I have it physical media box set. It's nuts, man. But you can watch poor Peter Jackson like gain weight more and more.
But now he's like lost weight, hasn't he?
I hope he's kept it off. I hope it's not a Mike Huckabee situation.
Mike Huckabee. I hope nothing is involved in the Mike Huckabee.
I hope Peter Jackson has still kept the weight off because you see his life deteriorate before he starts losing hair. It just starts falling out.
It's a strain. I mean, think of the strain on this.
This guy, Peter Jackson, who was like a horror director.
He directed some horror. He directed
in New Zealand.
I mean, you should see his movie like Brain Dead. It's crazy. It's a zombie comedy. And you talk about gory. There's a scene where a guy wanders through a room full of zombies holding a lawnmower up.
And, oh, my God.
But it's the thing is, it's not gory in the way like Seven is because it's so over the top. It's more fun. I mean, you literally are laughing because it's so crazy.
I can't believe he got this.
Like, I know. It is weird that he got this.
And he filmed. It's like they filmed for like 5 years or something to do all three movies at once. It's I can't even imagine this. This isn't a movie. This is like a project. It's like a government.
It's like building a city or
it's
something.
It's building a whole. It's baffling. All right. So I've hyped it up enough. But if you get a chance, guys, and I know Lord of the Rings is easy target. It's like it's this dorky, silly thing. But Will's giving me two thumbs up.
As we are now in, as we said before, you're hearing this long after, but it's October 29th. The Indians just won.
Oh, yeah. So they're up 3-1.
They're going
one.
Back to Cleveland 3-1.
No, I think, isn't it?
Is it 2-3? Oh, so they're staying
here. I
think
here. It's 2-3-2.
Oh, okay.
I think they're playing Chicago tomorrow night.
Oh, they might get to break Chicago's hearts right in the heart of Chicago.
I think that it's not in your best interest to be arrogant about the World Series right now.
I don't know. Yeah, by now you'll all know, so you know whether to laugh at me or not.
Yeah, exactly. Like right now everybody's going, man, Will blew the series for the Indians. You got to be careful with this.
Blew the series for the Indians.
You're from a city that doesn't win very often, so.
No, I don't. And I'm not arrogant about it.
Yeah, well, it sounded like there was some.
No, I just would like them to win in the heart of.
Congratulations on your victory, Will.
Woo! Sorry.
What are we watching next week,
buddy? How about we go back a little bit? We'll go back to the early 1990s.
Yeah,
I know. We'll get back into the 1930s soon enough because I know that's your favorite era. But why don't we go back and watch 1992's Glengarry Glen Ross? I know we've talked about it a lot. It's a movie I've seen a bunch of times, but I don't think you've seen it.
I've never seen it. No, it's a play.
It was based on a play by David Mamet.
There's a NoFX album that I know you don't care about.
I don't.
I want to say it's called Wolves and Wolf's Clothing, and it starts off with Alec Baldwin telling him, I always thought he said the leaves are weak.
No, it's the leads are weak. The leads are weak. You are weak.
You're weak.
That's right.
And then it just kicks off, and it's amazing.
I have nothing against NoFX. However, I will say this. They are probably only about the 400,000th people to quote that scene.
Oh, I've never. For me, that was my introduction.
It's a very quotable scene.
Never.
It's the opening scene in the movie. The movie's about a bunch of
it's like
hard luck salesmen trying to sell crap real estate.
Oh, it's not like a boiler room kind of thing. It's not. I thought I don't know anything about this
movie.
No,
they're selling crappy real estate and they're having a hard time doing it. It's not
good.
It's a very small movie. I mean, it's based on a play, so it takes place in a couple of rooms. The cast, however, is amazing. You got Alec Baldwin, who's only in the opening scene,
okay.
In a scene written specifically for the movie. Al Pacino in one of the best Al Pacino performances.
I was just thinking about Alec Baldwin. If Trump wins, like Alec Baldwin is definitely going to jail.
Oh my, yes. We're probably going to jail for the intro of this episode. But you got Pacino doing a good performance for once, not that Scent of Woman crap.
Sure,
I mean, doing an actual restrained performance. Jack Lemmon in one of his last performances.
Was Jack Lemmon in 12 Angry Men?
No, that's Henry Fonda.
Ah.
Okay. That's a good movie too. We should do that sometime.
I just remember that's like in one set the whole movie, and
yeah,
I thought maybe this was similar to the
no
I interrupted
Ed Harris, who you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Sleazeball Ed Harris.
He's not. Well, he's Alan Arkin. Young Kevin Spacey, a couple years before Seven.
Really?
When he still has some baby fat, kind of. You know?
I like Kevin Spacey.
He's an interesting character in this movie. And I think that covers it.
That's the big... No women.
There may be a waitress who is glimpsed, but literally, I don't think there are any females with speaking parts in this movie.
We're like Trump in that we just abandoned a general appeal. We're literally going for dudes. That's it.
Well,
I feel bad about that.
Fight Club and Seven, and let's see, Gwyneth Paltrow's head's in a box in Seven. So
it's been a
while.
It's been a month since we saw a woman.
I know.
Sorry. Well, I guess Marla. I mean, we saw Marla.
We saw Marla. We're not going to see a woman in Glenn Ross, but you know, we could. You know, there's a 1939 movie called The Women. It has no guys in it. Not a guy in sight.
So,
however, here's the thing about the movie: all they do is talk about guys.
Oh, really? That seems
it's an old Hollywood movie.
Yeah, it's 1939. So, make America great again, everybody.
That's right.
So this comes out the day before the election, right?
Yeah.
Go vote.
Go vote, people.
Go
please.
Go vote. Tweet us your little stickers.
Yeah.
Even if it's for Trump, for God's sakes, just go vote.
Just go vote, but please don't vote for Trump. Movies will be illegal.
They will be.
Except for
they'll be sued for libel.
Except for Home Alone 2, which he's in.
I'm sure he'll sue the producers of that movie for improperly.
No, he helps out Kevin McAllister.
Does he help him?
He points him in the direction of something.
That's good. Good job. Couldn't have walked him there or called the police.
Couldn't help Macaulay Culkin's later career when he was, you know, tied up in drugs and stuff.
On behalf of Will Pfeiffer, my name is Billy Culpa. Thank you for listening. Go vote tomorrow. We miss you all, most of all.